this approach actually accomplishes being able to finish everything, get through the whole book in one quarter. Now, we're going to have to look kind of the syllabus outline because this quarter we have the gospel meeting, which takes away two classes. So we'll see how that compares. But we're looking at big sections of Matthew, right? Okay, so the second meaning of the class is we're connecting Matthew to the big picture of the Bible. So that's another thing, is we're connecting Matthew to the big themes from Genesis to Revelation. How are big Bible themes connected to Matthew? How does Matthew connect with the law, the prophets, the Psalms? How does Jesus fulfill the Old Testament as a whole? So that's kind of what our goal with the class is. If there was a class on the Gospel of John, if you studied the Gospel of John before, what would big picture things be that kind of stretch throughout the whole book? John has seven
Signs.
signs, and John also has seven
I am
I am
statements.
statements, right? The seven signs, seven I am statements. If this was a class in Isaiah, we would talk about the big structure of the book, right? You'd say, oh, well, the first major part of Isaiah is chapters 1 through 39, the second part is 40 through 66. So that's typical to do for a class looking at it in the big picture. Talk about structure, talk about repeated things, okay? So in the Gospel of Matthew, it's the same thing. There's a clear outline of the book that helps everything in the book fall into place. So here's the one thing that I'd like for you to memorize as soon as possible, and we'll talk about this more throughout this whole class, but that Matthew has arranged his material into five speeches. Speech is a great word. You may hear about the discourses, and that just means the speech sections. But if you can have this memorized by Wednesday, then the rest of the quarter is going to be a breeze for you. Here's the five sections of Matthew. Matthew 5 through 7, 10, 13, 18, then 23 through 25. So some of these might be familiar. For example, you probably already know, what do we call Matthew 5 through 7? Sermon on the Mount. What is Matthew 13 kind of all about? Matthew 13 has the sower, the treasure hidden in the field, the leaven, the fish.
Parables.
Parables. That's Matthew's collection of parables. And then what's Matthew 23 through 25? That's another kind of famous kind of section.
It's the Olivet Discourse.
Yeah, they call the, especially 24 and 25, the Olivet Discourse, the section on kind of judgment there. So you got the five speeches, 5 through 7, 10, 13, 18, 23 through 25. Now, in between those speeches and around them are these story sections. So, no surprise then, you have these sections of 1 through 4, 8, 9, 11, 12, 14, 17, 19, 22, and then 26 through 28.
We have to memorize that too.
Nope. You'll remember that because that's everything else, right? It's like once you know that, you know the rest, right? Okay, so here's another way of visualizing the structure of kind of the chapter stacked there. You'll notice that the longest speech sections are at the beginning and the end, and then there's multiple story sections that are kind of four chapters long. Matthew has pretty good chapter breaks in terms of the medieval scholar who decided to break it down the way that they did. Okay, here's another way, visualizing structure, same thing, just broken apart a little bit. Here's another way. I don't know if you feel like that's like visually satisfying or not, but that's just breaking down the story sections and the speech sections. Okay, let's look at this kind of a slightly different way. Here's our speech sections, 5 through 7, 10, 13, 18, 22 through 25. And the Gospel of Matthew puts these sections together like links in a chain. So they're not isolated. Each link goes with the one before it and after it. So here's the story section of 1 through 4, 8 through 9, etc. Right? They're all like links on a chain linking the whole book together. But here's what we mean by that. Part of the fun of studying Matthew is seeing how that every section has a connection to the next one and the one before it, that kind of thing. So you read 1 through 4, go, okay, cool. But then you read 5 through 7 and see, oh, that connects back with what we were just looking at. And those things kind of carry on with it. So then 5 through 7 connects with 8 and 9, 8 and 9, back and forth. So that kind of idea. So that's part of the fun, is you look at a section and then, okay, I wonder how the next section will pick up on these things, right? Or say you read the parables, chapter 13 all by itself, but wait a second, it actually has connections to the section that was right before it, and it will have connections to what comes after it as well. So basically what we've been saying so far is this graphic shows us how the book is outlined. Speech 1, speech 2, speech 3, speech 4, speech 5. And then this graphic is a reminder that every section is actually kind of interlinked with the things around it. Does that make sense so far? That's a lot of what we'll be doing. One of the main questions we'll ask for every section is, how does this connect with the section that was right before it? Okay, so like I said, let's start memorizing this. 5 through 7, 10, 13, 18, 23 through 25. Okay, does someone think they have those numbers already?
No.
Sure.
Now, Josh was in some of these classes last quarter helping with AV teams. He could, like, anyone think they have the numbers so far already? Eric?
5 through 7, 10, 13, 18, 23, 25.
Did he get it right, Craig?
Yeah.
He did. That's right. Yeah. That's good. Okay. 5 through 7, 10, 13, 18, 23 through 25. The reason it's good to memorize that early is just then for the rest of the quarter, you're just kind of, you've created the filing cabinets, and then you're just filling in the filing cabinets. So I'm going to have that in your head. Okay. Now, let's talk about why in the world we would divide Matthew up this way. Our first big clue that Matthew wants us to see this organization is that every speech ends with the same verbatim formula. It may not be verbatim in your translation, but all five end this way. And it came to pass when Jesus had finished, fill in the blank. So you look at the end of 5 through 7, and it came to pass when Jesus had finished these words. It came to pass when Jesus had finished commanding his 12 disciples. No surprise, that speech is for the disciples. And it came to pass when Jesus had finished these parables. And it came to pass when Jesus had finished these words. And it came to pass when Jesus had finished all these words, which kind of feels like a nice conclusion to the whole thing, right? So that is at the end. It's kind of like Matthew's little flag, little formula. Hey, that's the end of this speech here. Now, when I say that they end that way, I'm not saying that it's necessarily like in the same chapter. It could be that, like for example, I think that it's an 11. Matthew 11 verse 1 is where that shows up. You know what I mean? So it may not be in chapter 10, but just because the chapter break isn't there, don't get thrown off by that. After each of these sections, you'll have this little formula. Does that make sense? Any comments or questions on that? That's our first big clue that Matthew wants us to see this. Okay, here's our next big clue that Matthew wants us to see these five speeches. Our next big clue is that Matthew has these five speeches organized in a structure in themselves. Now, throughout this quarter, when I say Matthew, I don't necessarily mean that Matthew knew all this. It could be the Holy Spirit accomplishing this. I may be meaning more just Matthew, like the book is trying to teach us that, but in the book. So these five speeches have their own structure. So the first and the last go together. They begin and end the same way. So we'll notice that, and we won't highlight that until we get to 23 through 25. But when we get to 23 through 25, we'll be like, oh, that's just how 5 through 7 was. So 5 through 7 has a ton of parallels with 23 through 25. And the themes there are people who are in the kingdom versus people who will not be in the kingdom. That's the kind of the topics of those two speeches. Okay, then 10 through 18, there's connections there. It's relationships. Our relationships to people who are outside the kingdom versus our relationships with Christians, those inside the kingdom, those in the church. So even in the five, they mirror each other, and there are parallels there. I'm not going to give you the details of that because that's giving away the fun, right? We'll see that when we get there, but just have this in the back of your mind that we're going to see some parallels and some mirroring between the speeches as we go. Okay. And then our final big clue that Matthew wants us to see this organization is that the five speeches in Matthew line up with two other sets of five, the other great sets of five from the Old Testament. So here's Jesus' speeches. Can you think of a set of five by a single author, five books or so, that we see in the Old Testament that's kind of a big deal? The Pentateuch, the books of Moses, right? So the books of the Torah, called the Pentateuch, which means the five, right? And so Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. Very good. There's another one, though, that is in the Old Testament already a setup to kind of build on Moses' set of five. There's another set of five, kind of all by the same author, that form five books, and that is the Psalms, the five books of the Psalms. So the Psalms are organized into five books. Not all of the Psalms are by David, of course, but David has a psalm in all five sections. All five, the Psalms themselves point to David because it's the temple worship, right? Well, you didn't have temple worship when Moses wrote that. You didn't even have the temple yet, right? So David sets up temple worship, and so the Psalms are kind of quintessentially Davidic in that sense. So here's what's really cool. What we find are really strong connections in the setup of these five speeches with five books of the Torah and the five books of the Psalms. I think you'll agree with me when you go through that these are strong enough connections to where we're not just making stuff up. I mean, could you find some connection between the Sermon on the Mount and there are 41 Psalms there? You could find some connection, right? So, but we're not just trying to make stuff up. I think what you'll find is they're very strong connections, very purposeful connections. The Sermon on the Mount has some strong connections with the Book of the Psalms. The second speech connects with Exodus. The third speech has an interesting connection to the third Book of the Psalms. The fourth speech connects to the Book of Numbers. And the fifth speech connects with Deuteronomy. Now, are there other connections to be made? Yeah, but I think these are the strongest ones here. So when we get there, we'll get there. But the point is that it's very purposeful that Matthew has five speeches, because that then instantly sets up a comparison and a contrast with Moses. Because you think of five in the Old Testament, well, that's Moses. Well, no, Jesus has five. So Jesus is the new Moses. What about David? Well, Jesus is the new David. Jesus is the makes his temple. So all those kind of connections. Okay, comments or questions on that? Eric.
Isn't Deuteronomy split into five speeches as well?
That may be, yes. And if that's so, then that would add to this idea of kind of Jesus being the new Moses. Moses had five. But I don't remember that. If I've seen that, I've totally forgotten it. That's a great thing to bring out. Jesus is clearly mirroring the judgment of Deuteronomy when we get to Matthew 23-25. Okay, so try to have this memorized as soon as you can. 5-7, 10, 13, 18, 23-25. Okay. While we're going through the quarter, try to remember the wow, why, how idea. You know, we've studied Matthew a lot before. We know a lot of these stories. We've read the parables. I've seen the miracles in other gospels, right? Wow is, let's be impressed, right? Matthew contains amazing stories, profound teachings. We've been given this amazing book. Let's be wowed, right? Some things in this quarter will be new. Some will be very familiar. But let's be impressed with Jesus. Let's try to, you know, be wowed by Jesus. Then we ask why. Why is this story and teaching given to us? Why is that here in this section? And how can I apply this story or teaching to my life? So why is this being taught to me? But then how do I live this out today? How does this impact my relationship with God? How does this impact my relationship with Jesus? So I like that breakdown, wow, why, how. There, and we'll try to keep that in mind through the quarter. If you ever bring out a wow, like I was wowed by, I'm just impressed with God here, with Jesus here, bring that out, share that with the class. I can apply this to my life. This was encouraging to me this week, that kind of idea. Okay, so let's keep moving forward. Like I said, this class in particular, trying to get through a lot of introductory material here to set us up for the homework and the worksheet here in a minute. One of Matthew's biggest ideas through the book is that Jesus is the fulfillment of all of scriptures. All of the scriptures. So Matthew 5:17, do not think that I've come to abolish the law of the prophets. I've not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. So law and the prophets is the shorthand way of saying all of scripture, right? It's not just it's not just Leviticus and Isaiah. It's the law is the first five books. Kind of everything else is after that, the law and the prophets. Okay, so Matthew overtly makes 68 Old Testament references in its wording. That is kind of quoting and wording from the Old Testament. But even when the exact wording isn't there, you're gonna have even more than that. So 68 is the wording references. The fuller count is gonna far exceed that. Matthew 9 times says it is written, 12 times reference to it being fulfilled. So throughout the book, it's gonna have that. So here's the book of Matthew. Look at the occurrence of the phrase through the book, something along the lines of, this was to fulfill what was written. It's kind of all through the book, right? That Matthew is constantly going back, saying this was to fulfill this, this was to fulfill that. And so that's just the phrase, this was to fulfill, but that idea is there throughout the book, even when you don't see the phrase, this was to fulfill what was written. So some specific examples of that is the Jeremiah theme. Here's what's really interesting about the Jeremiah theme. The name Jeremiah only appears in the New Testament three times. And all three of those times that the word Jeremiah shows up is the beginning, the middle, and the end of Matthew. Now, is Jeremiah referenced in other passages? Obviously, right? Jeremiah is referenced and quoted, but the only time the name Jeremiah shows up is in Matthew 2, Matthew 16, and Matthew 27. And this then is the Jeremiah theme that we'll get to later on in the quarter, is that Matthew begins his gospel with a Jeremiah reference. At the heart of the gospel in Matthew 16 is the Jeremiah reference, and then at the end of the book is the Jeremiah reference. So Jesus is the new Jeremiah, right? Jesus is the greater Jeremiah, and Jeremiah just points to Jesus. So you got the Jeremiah theme through there. Okay, comments or questions on that so far?
So it's only in Matthew?
Only the word Jeremiah.
Okay.
There's other Jeremiah references. I mean, Jeremiah 31, but the word Jeremiah, the name. It's a little funny. In the Old King James, the Matthew 27 calls him Jeremy. I don't know why. But you read the Old King James, Matthew 27, it says this is to fulfill what Jeremy said. It's just funny. It's just interesting. Okay. No hard feelings if you're a King James person, but it is funny. It's funny. Okay. Okay, to give another example, the middle speech of the book, Matthew 13, right? The middle speech has this verse, Matthew 13, 17. Truly I say to you, many prophets and righteous people long to see what you see and didn't see it, long to hear what you hear and did not hear it. And then after that, there's three references to the book of Daniel. You're like, that seems pretty purposeful. Now, am I going to tell you what those three Daniel references are right now? No. If you want to work on that this week, go for it. You'll find it there. But it's just interesting, this whole thing of Jesus being the fulfillment of all the law and all the prophets. Many prophets and righteous people long to see these things. And then you get Daniel, Daniel, Daniel. It's just very clearly purposeful. Okay, so here's what we've seen so far today. One of Matthew's biggest ideas through the book is that Jesus is the fulfillment of all of the scriptures, all the Jewish scriptures. Matthew arranges his gospel to have five speeches of Jesus that line up with the five books of the Torah, line up with the five books of the Psalms. Matthew says something like this was to fulfill what was written around 20 times. Matthew makes a Jeremiah reference at the beginning, middle, end of the book. The middle speech of Jesus has three Daniel references. And so that's kind of what we've covered so far today, right? And what we're about to see, lining up for the homework for Wednesday, is that Matthew begins and ends his gospel like the Jewish scriptures begin and end. So Matthew intentionally makes the book of Matthew look like the Old Testament as a whole, because Matthew begins like the Old Testament begins and ends like the Old Testament ends. Okay, so here's homework for Wednesday, and you'll pick up your worksheet when it's time for it. But Matthew begins and ends his gospel like the Jewish scriptures. Okay, specifically here, Matthew 1 through 5, and then Matthew 28 there. Okay, so what your homework is going to be for Wednesday is to look to see if you can see all the ways that Matthew does this. The Matthew 1 has a whole lot of Genesis connections. Matthew 2 has a lot of Exodus connections. Matthew 3 has, see where we're going with this? Matthew 3 has Leviticus connections. Matthew 4 has Numbers connections. And Matthew 5 has Deuteronomy connections. And then Matthew 28 has 2 Chronicles references. And you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. 2 Chronicles is not the end of the Old Testament. Well, actually it was. Actually it was. The ways that the Hebrew Old Testament ordered their books, same books, same Old Testament, they called it their scriptures. Today they'll call it the Bible. They would call it the Tanakh. But it's just in a different order. So here's the books of the Tanakh and the Torah, the Nevi'im, which means prophets, the former prophets and the latter prophets. We talked about the former prophets, I think in the Starbucks, the Nexus Park study recently, right? That phrase. So the former prophets, the latter prophets, and then the Ketuvim is the writing, so T and K. Anyways, you see here, the last book is Chronicles in their scripture. And so the 2 Chronicles ends on a really high note. 2 Chronicles ends with, you get to go home, Cyrus's decree. So the order of the books doesn't matter. But in Jesus's day, this is the outline of the Bible, the end of their scriptures. And I should have brought my Hebrew Old Testament, but you go to the end of that, which looks like the front because it's Hebrew, it's from right to left. But you look at the last book, it ends with Chronicles. That's the last ordering. Here's another infographic, because we all love infographics. Here's the Torah, the prophets, and the writings, ends with Chronicles there. And so the end of Matthew has a lot of connections to the book of Chronicles, specifically the end of 2 Chronicles. So that's the idea, is that Matthew begins and ends his gospel like the Old Testament does. So for your homework on Wednesday, you're going to look at Matthew chapter 1 and see if you can find connections with Genesis, Matthew 2 with Exodus. That's essentially all that this worksheet is. It's just Matthew 1, Genesis, make those connections there. And then Matthew 28, the end of 2 Chronicles. I will say on here that really the last paragraph of the whole scripture is the last paragraph of 2 Chronicles is what you want to focus on. Yes, there's more connections, but the easiest ones to see are what Jesus says at the end of Matthew 28 and what Cyrus says at the end of 2 Chronicles there. So this is your homework worksheet. It's pretty self-explanatory, but that's the goal. Any questions or comments on the homework? Okay, so you can pick that up when you are leaving. Okay. Yeah, that's right. It's the very last paragraph of Matthew and the very last paragraph of 2 Chronicles that you especially want to look at there. Okay, any comments or questions on what we've been flying through so far? Okay, who remembers the 5 speeches and the chapters they are in the book of Matthew? Craig?
I remember the chapters.
That's all you need to remember.
So 5 through 7, 10, 13, 18, 23 through 25.
Very good. Katja, did you get it right? That's right. Very good. Very good. Okay. Good. I'm going to pass this out, and we're just going to start doing this together then, because we have time. We've got 2 there. And then, Eric, can you kind of pass this out to people around you that direction? Okay. Okay, I want you to take 2 or 3 minutes. And we're fairly familiar with the book of Genesis. And I want you to look at Matthew chapter 1. And I want you to take 2 or 3 minutes looking at Matthew chapter 1 and see if anything in there makes you think of the book of Genesis. Eric, I think some in the back. Okay, so look at Matthew chapter 1.
Thank you.
Look at Matthew chapter 1 and see if there's anything in there that reminds you of the book of Genesis. And if you don't know the book of Genesis, it's okay. You can just take some time to read Matthew chapter 1. Okay, I'll give you just another minute to look at Matthew 1, read Matthew 1, get a little familiar with that, and then we'll see if we can make some Genesis connections from Matthew chapter 1. Okay, so if you willing to be brave and share some thoughts, I'd like to see if you see any connections with Matthew 1 going back to Genesis. Okay, Kata.
You won't judge me if it's like a stretch. It feels like a stretch.
I won't judge you.
Okay.
They will judge you. Okay. But I will not judge you.
I found two. One is God's hand in what would be considered an impossible conception.
Ah, very good. So who has impossible conceptions in Genesis?
I was thinking Sarah, but also I guess there's also Rebecca versus a virgin. I mean, different situations, but still.
No, it's the same. So Paul makes that connection in Galatians 4 when he says that Isaac was born of the Spirit. I mean, that's us. We're Isaac. Jesus is Isaac. Very good. Not a stretch.
Okay. And then the other one that I have is the concept of God being with us. So God was with Adam and Eve, and Jesus is with us. You know, Emmanuel has come.
Okay. I'll have to think more about the Adam and Eve connection. I think ultimately there's a connection there because Jesus is reconciling us back to God to the Garden of Eden. So, good. And Kato, where is the referenced prophecy that Matthew quotes? Quotes in verse 23. Remember what prophet that is who says?
Isaiah.
That's right, that's Isaiah. Isaiah 7. There, call his name Emmanuel. Okay, good. Bill, you had your hand up a minute ago.
Yeah. One was Abraham. The genealogy goes back to Abraham.
Yep.
And he had the call of Abraham in Genesis 12.
Yep.
I piece together, whether right or wrong, the beginning compared to birth as the start of the new kingdom.
Okay, so let's see. What verse are you looking at with that?
I just the creation story in Genesis chapter 1. And then the birth arrives here in chapter 1, verses 18 and following.
Okay. So we'll make a connection there in a minute because the word Genesis shows up in kind of that context of the birth of Jesus. So the genealogy here. So good. And do you have any other ones?
Kind of a stretch, but Genesis 3:15 is essentially the promise that he's coming and he's here.
Yeah, exactly. No, that is big because all those that seed idea. What was the sermon recently we talked about? Like the seed of, the seed of the serpent, the seed of Eve, and then the seed. And so that seed idea is huge through here. Good, and all that starts with that promise in Genesis 3. You kind of have said this, but the genealogies here remind us of all those genealogies in Genesis, right? So this is crazy, but when Matthew says here the book of the generations or the book of the genealogy, the Greek word here is Genesis. Now, why there isn't a end quotation mark there, I don't know. The word here is generations. The Greek word here is Genesis, which is literally the actual title of the book of Genesis. So, literally, the second word of the book of Matthew is Genesis. The first four words of Matthew can be translated the book of the Genesis of Jesus Christ. I think I should be able to show that. This is just your good old interlinear, right? See if I can grab this and pull it over. Good old interlinear. Do you see that? There's the Greek Biblos Geneseos, the book of the genealogy, the book of the Genesis. There, that second word. So the book, Biblos, of the Genesis of Jesus Christ, son of David, son of Abraham. So it's just kind of amazing how literally the second word in Matthew is the word Genesis. So that's really cool. But that connects with the idea of birth. That connects with the idea of the seed, right? The seed promise to Eve, the seed promise to Abraham, the seed promise to David. Those are huge, huge things there. Okay, good. Yes, Aaron.
A couple. The Spirit is moving in 1:2, and the Spirit is moving in Matthew 1:18-20.
Okay, so the Spirit of God doing his creative work.
Yep.
Connections there, good.
And then the other one was Joseph sleeps and is advised and then takes Mary as his wife, and Adam sleeps and then takes Eve as his.
Okay. So, and there's one that I thought you were going to say here. Joseph sleeps and dreams.
Yes.
And, of course, that connects with Joseph's dreams, right? Mm-hmm. So the sleep thing... I hadn't even thought about that. That's a cool connection. Other connections?
Jacob sleeps and he receives a vision. I mean, there's a lot of that in Genesis.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So here you have Joseph with his dreams, but then Genesis has other dreams as well. Eric?
Genesis is divided up by genealogies in structure, right? So Matthew begins with structure.
Matthew begins with the structure. Good. Yeah. Good. So let's see. The Abraham focus. clear Abraham focus, connects the promise to Abraham as the focus of the book. Several Genesis stories are referenced in there. That one's kind of so obvious, but you have these people in the genealogy, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Judah, Perez, Zerah, and Tamar. The Zerah reference there is I think, fascinating. Joseph, Jesus' father, is having dreams. God giving people's names, right? God gives people's names in Genesis. God names baby Jesus. And so even the idea of naming babies kind of has a Genesis kind of feel to it. But you guys have contributed other things here. So class is going to be wrapping up. I'm surprised we haven't heard the bell yet, but that's okay. Other things you want to share, because that's all my slides have, about Matthew 1 connections back to Genesis.
Oh, like, the whole book of Genesis?
Yeah, I would see the whole book of Genesis showing up here. Even like Joseph's dreams is like a Genesis thing, sort of the end of Genesis. But here you have, in Matthew 1,
not
you have...
Not necessarily Matthew itself, but there were four rivers that came out of chapter 2 of Genesis. We have four Gospels.
Okay. Okay, so definitely there's Genesis foreshadowing there. I like the four lepers with the good news in 2 Kings 2, another like the four Gospels kind of thing there. So there's all kinds of connections there. The Abraham and Isaac stuff is just huge, right? One thing that we'll not have time for in this class is to talk about the genealogy in detail here. But how does Matthew break down his genealogy here in Matthew chapter 1? 14, right? 14 from Abraham to
David.
14 from David to
captivity.
And 14 from
captivity to Christ.
5 minute warning.
Captivity to Christ. So 14, 14, 14. Now, the fact of the matter is that Matthew is being symbolic here, because there's missing people in the genealogy. It's very clear. There's kings that you can read about whose names aren't there. It does not literally add up to 14, but symbolically it adds up to 14. So there's some really fascinating things going on in Matthew's genealogy, but this is not a Matthew in the details class. This is not a Matthew in the weeds class. God willing, next year, we've been talking with the elders, we'll do the Matthew in the weeds class. We're not going to call it that. We're going to call it Matthew under the microscope. But this is the big picture of Matthew. What that will be is Matthew, like, just taking piecemeal some really interesting things through the book and examining shorter things like the genealogy. But what we do see here is some symbolic things going on in Matthew where it doesn't literally add up to 14, but there's Matthew is purposefully doing that by including things, to symbolically, it's certainly 14, 14, 14. So any comments or questions on that piece of it? Okay.
Is there a relationship to Genesis in that?
I can go into it a little bit if no one else has a comment to make. Okay, so think about it this way. The Abraham, where is he when God finds him? Is he in the Promised Land?
No.
No, where is he?
Early.
He's in over in Babylon. Captivity, pagan land, right? Babylon is also called Chaldeans, right?
Idol worship.
Yeah, exactly. Dark, right? Idol. Idols. Okay. 14 generations later, you come to who?
David.
Okay. How is Israel under David? Good. It's kind of the high point, right? David, Solomon, peace, emperor ruling over multiple nations, getting the temple ready. Very, very good. Okay. 14 later, where are we back in? We're back in Babylon. That's what it calls it, in the deportation. It calls it the deportation, but our typical word for this is exile, right? We're back in Babylon. You see the point here? we've moved back to Babylon. Okay, so 14 later, where are we?
Christ.
We're back to Jesus, who is the son of David, right? We're back to David. So God brought them, Abraham, to David. That was good. Sin brought them back to Babylon. But Jesus is the new David, 14 later, that, you know, he's the new rescuer. He's the new king, all of that. So that is, I think, a big reason why we have this 14, 14, 14. Oh, missed the 14 there. Okay, any thoughts on that?
Is there a special symbolic of 14?
Yes.
Symbolism of 14?
So David, the name David in the Hebrew numbering system, so David equals the number 14. So that's just like A equals 1, B equals 2, C equals 3.
Mm-hmm.
And that was big. Everyone did that in the ancient world. Hebrew did it, Latin did it, Greek did it. Their numbers were letters. And so when your numbers are letters, it's easy to look at a name and be like, oh, that adds up to whatever. So David adds up to 14. So that's probably a part of it. Here's probably another part of it. And you can think about this, but the calendar in general, the lunar calendar, has how many days in a month? 28. Okay. Is Babylon light or dark?
Dark.
How does the month start? With the new moon when it is dark. Okay. So this is the start of the month, if you will, in darkness. And then 14 days later, you're full moon. Full moon, that's what that means. That means full moon. But remember that the full moon is Passover and Tabernacles, which are the great high points, right? Tabernacles. Okay. 14 days later, you're back in darkness.
End of class.
14 days later, you're...
End of class.
Back with Jesus. Full moon.
End of class.
Passover. God with us. So I think that it also, the 14, 14 is David. I think it's also the idea of 14 days from darkness to light. That's Genesis 1. Is you start with darkness, you end in light. So the day ends in darkness and its high point is light. The month starts in darkness and its high point is light. That kind of thing. So that got a little nerdy there. Didn't know we were going to go there today, but that's why we're going to do Matthew and under the microscope class, so we can jump into fun things like that. But we won't typically be able to do detailed things in the class like that, right? So.